Welcome, everyone, to the Pop Culture Podcast by Fantastic Geek. My name is Matt, and joining me, as always, is Pete. Hello, Pete.
Hello, Matt. Hello, everybody. Here to you today after three of four total days at the 10th annual New York Comic Con.
Indeed, quite a whirlwind, and glad to kind of be giving people the adventure in their earbuds.
Yes, today we will be doing a chronological blow-by-blow. We'll explain a little bit more in a minute what that means, but it's going to have effects for all of the podcasts that we do in terms of individual content. But Matt, of course, our sponsor, tongue-in-cheek here, of course, Pepsi Perfect.
Indeed, Pete. It's just perfect going down there. And the good news is, Pete, it does not cost $50 as shown in Back to the Future 2.
It doesn't.
Well, Pete, I guess with that, we'll officially get underway. Again, you kind of gave fair warning. If you're looking for nitty-gritty analysis on the panels which we attended that are Marvel TV shows, we'll be updating those respective feeds a little bit later in the week. We'll certainly make mention of them during our conversation here. And Pete, what starts the conversation off?
We're going to begin, of course, with numbers. It was very well documented last year that Thursday became a day of quote-unquote regular programming in the past that had really kind of been for pros, and exhibitors were still setting up. And, you know, Reed Pop, very wise to make that fourth day, the first day, an official day. And it's no surprise that last year, New York Comic Con wrestled away the title of highest attendance at a Comic Con, 151,000 fans from San Diego Comic Con. San Diego Comic Con stole it back in July. And Matt, we have no official numbers yet as of late in the day on Sunday here, October 11th, as the closing ceremonies of the con are going on, which I can only imagine is a Batman extinguishing a flame, or, you know, a bat signal or something. there needs to be one. Based on the anecdotal numbers we saw, there was no let up. In fact, it was more intense than ever. And we did 3 days. We've never done more than two. Those of you that are doing four and are there, you know, all the time, Ja Rule, man, God bless.
Yeah, really. I mean, cause we had three long days, and I guess with that, let's get into them, Pete. Part of how they managed the lines new last year and returning this year was for the main stage. They do bands ahead of time. And that worked really well last year. Your thoughts on the banding for the 3,000 seat main stage, not banding for the 2,000 seat Empire stage, etc.
Yeah, you mentioned the wristbands, and it was a huge improvement last year. The year before, and you can go back and listen to our coverage of last year's Comic-Con, we had to squat in the main stage theater for about 6+ hours to get to the Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and then the Walking Dead panel with just about the entire cast there. And that was a hall, you know, in a hall that there were things we were extraordinarily interested in. There were things not so much. And this system definitely works. However, they're going to need to go to wristbands with that Empire stage for next year, and here's our greatest evidence as to why. So Game of Thrones had three actors on Thursday at New York Comic Con. Natalie Dormer, who plays Queen Marjorie, being the principal, and with much crossover appeal, apart from the fact that, you know, she's drop-dead gorgeous. You know, she's in the Hunger Games franchise, etc. She was also in Captain America, the first Avenger briefly, as I liked how Matt put it the other day, girl who makes smoochy time with Cap, army girl who makes smoochy time with Cap.
American army girl, no less. So it's a lot of like, hello, Captain Rogers. I too am from the America.
Yes. And I'm going to thank you for everybody. And there we go. We had gotten out of that theater. We had seen the Kevin Smith panel for Comic Book Men. We had seen the Star Wars Rebels panel. We then hoofed it across the Javits Center to go to a press conference for Star Wars Rebels. We said, hey, we're going to go back into that theater for the first two or the next two episodes of season two of Star Wars Rebels. And we kept saying, as you know, well before the food court, the line was there, like, no, this must be for hot dogs. Oh no, these people, it's going to split. They're going into the main stage. Oh my God, this line is now 3/4 of a mile long. And yeah, really, really intense demand. Thankfully, enough people left after that panel so that we could get in for Star Wars Rebels, because that really would have defeated the purpose of, you know, watching the panel and going to the press conference and not getting able to see the next two episodes, which haven't aired yet. And yeah, I think that was an illustration, the greatest illustration of how pent up the demand was for that particular stage.
And I think maybe if there was one, let's say next year, if they don't do wristbands for that Empire stage, I think the lesson learned is they just need to stagger the audiences that are going in there a little bit differently, to go Star Wars Rebels, followed by Robert Kirkman talking about The Walking Dead, which we were not in there for. But he was talking about The Walking Dead comics.
Yes.
I think a lot of people saw Robert Kirkman, Walking Dead, and we're going to go for it. And fine, even if you're not into the comics, but you're into the show, I'm sure that that was nonetheless a valuable experience. But to then go The Walking Dead guy, followed by three people from Game of Thrones, that's a really similar audience. And maybe that's just how the schedule shook out. But I think maybe in a perfect world, if they were going to magically go back and not do wristbands this year but make a tweak, maybe it's just do something to kind of be filtering that audience in and out, since there is no mandatory clearing of the room. But as you mentioned, Pete, on that day, well, I guess let's not stick with Thursday, because that's what it was like on the Empire stage, a little less chaotic for the most part when it came to that main stage area and its queue line, etc.
Well, listen, you know, I think the important thing to understand is you can't please everybody. They're doing a great job given the explosion in attendance in this convention, you know, 33,000 people the first year, up to 151,000 last year, to the point that, you know, they've now scheduled so many events outside of the Javits Center simply for space. I mean, Hammerstein Ballroom has taken on things. They've you know, just spread things in a pocket across the city. The Walking Dead Friday night had their season 6 premiere, which will air later on tonight at Madison Square Garden, for crying out loud. So there's a tremendous thirst for this content. The wristbands, great improvement. But you know, it's swollen to the point where not everybody's going to get into everything they want to get. And unfortunately you have to prioritize.
And I think if you, dear listener, as a future attendee, potentially just keep that in mind, that that's how they are scheduling it. You might not like it. You know, that you have to make a choice. Which queue line are you going to go get a wristband for first? Are you going to do X-Files or are you going to do Marvel Netflix, with the knowledge that that might not work out very well for you? You know, I guess, you know, I mean, we saw how that band experience was much busier this year for the high profile stuff compared to last year. At least you're going to know in the morning where you stand for these afternoon and evening things. I think the banding system, if that is its purpose to let you know, are you in or are you out, then it works. And for the most part, I mean, people were very, very kind of content to be standing in these band lines that might be, you know, an hour or two before they officially started handing them out at the stroke of 10 o'clock, Pete.
Something we've observed for several years, but I think no more so this year, is how wonderful the staff of New York Comic Con is. And I think it's a mix of the repop people and the people who are there every day at the Javits Center, regardless, but super friendly. And with all the demand, you know, you could think, and, you know, we did hear some stories and witness a little bit with the crush of people trying to get into the lanes, the chutes, whatever you want to call them. But they do a really, really good job. Again, you can't please everybody. There's going to be people that don't get what they want to get to, and there's going to be some upset.
Well, I guess now is a good time to mention, you know, we had a really wonderful experience with one staff member in particular. We knew, I guess we'll let's put Saturday morning and Saturday evening in context. Last year, for the Friday Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. panel, which ended up being a little bit of Agent Carter too, just because of how we had timed ourselves, we got to the Javits Center at 10:15, knew to get into the queue line. It was definitely busy in there, but we, you know, we hustled on up, we got our bands, we got into Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., no problem. This year on Friday, you could, for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and kind of similar, you know, similar profile stuff, you could tell that there were just more people in the queue line. But we got in fine. We went in through the media entrance, and the worker out there said, you know, hey, no problem. You'll be able to get into the queue line without a concern. When we got there on Saturday for Marvel Netflix, you know, with the purpose of let's get the bands for Marvel Netflix, there were just more people, period. There were more people online outside, and when we got in, there were more people inside. And when we got to the rear of the Marvel Netflix line, it was literally at that moment that one worker said, this line is filled. It is filled to capacity. This line is capped. Go away.
It was closed in front of us, and we're going to go into more detail how that resolved itself when we look at that individual day. But let's just say, Matt, patience, persistence, cool-headedness pays off.
And a staff that's dedicated to, obviously, safety first, and making sure the line, you know, numbers and adequate resources and all that. But, you know, the comment that, you know, when we returned to the story, the comment that was made to us was, we know how much this means to the fans. So I guess with that, Pete, should we go back to the beginning of our con experience?
Let's go back in time, Matt, which is exactly where we went on Thursday when we got in the building. The 88 MPH, mile per hour, presentation, which is about the Back in Time documentary coming out for the Back to the Future 30th anniversary, which will come out on October 21st, 2015. I believe that date has some resonance.
Fun, fun, fun. And yeah, Pete, they had said to the happiness of the crowd, iTunes, yay, Amazon, yay, Netflix, yay, which means you can see this and kind of pay for it by way of your Netflix subscription, if you will, as opposed to kind of like a per dollar amount.
Right. So on hand was director Jason Aaron, executive producer Louis Krubik, and producer Lee Leshin, and started talking about how what was initially a documentary about the one screen used privately owned DeLorean from Back to the Future 3 up in Massachusetts, that soon, you know, the ball just got rolling and you know, kept going and going. They had a Kickstarter that raised $45,000. And then it's suddenly, you know, we've got the ear of Back to the Future executive producer Bob Gale, who, you know, knocked down a lot of doors for them as far as access with interviews. And, you know, they had another Kickstarter when they went to post-production. They raised $145,000. So really, in what we were shown bits and pieces of and some outtakes, a pretty comprehensive documentary about a movie that, you know, 30 years on still means a lot to people.
It really was a charming story that they took us through, the story of making this documentary, and just how, you know, they were fans, same as us. I mean, obviously with some filmmaking aspirations or experience or whatever it might be, but just how this thing grew and this fan passion that they had, you know, got them to the next person and got them some Kickstarter funding and got them to somebody who had producing experience to produce the documentary, to Bob Gale, and how this thing built. And then, you know, after some work and some finagling, there they are interviewing Michael J. Fox, interviewing Steven Spielberg, and they got Pete everybody that they could have possibly hoped to get, period. The two exceptions being the two people who you couldn't possibly get, which were Thomas Wilson, who plays Biff, who rather famously, or at least famous, I think, to a lot of Back to the Future fans, if you see him in the wherever, you know, you see him out in life, hey, aren't you from Back to the Future? He will say yes, and he will hand you a small either business card or index card that answers every question. It entitled something like, every Back to the Future question you could possibly ask. And its answers. And then he will say, there you go, have a nice day, and walk away from you. The other is Crispin Glover, who, if you don't know the relationship between Crispin Glover and the Back to the Future movies and how he decided 1989 is a good time to sue Steven Spielberg, that might be why you haven't seen much of Crispin Glover since Crispin Glover. I was martyrizing him there, but you know, he's separated from a lot in Hollywood, including the Back to the Future production.
Hey, you, get your damn hands off my career.
Yeah, I guess it's worth mentioning he was in the right. This was over reusing his footage and lookalikes in Back to the Future 2 to give the impression that he was in it, and he sued, and he was in the right in terms of how, either in courts or in the by way of kind of union adjudication. But still, you get to bite Spielberg's hand, you get a bite back.
Yeah, and I get it. I had never heard that detail that Tom Wilson hands out a little card. It's better than, you know, the bully from the movies, you know, ignoring them or blowing up on them. But I don't know. You can't sit with these guys for a little bit. I mean, they got everybody. They even got Christopher Lloyd, who, you know, we saw there at New York Comic Con a couple years ago. And, you know, it's no secret his, you know, he's in his waning days as far as his memory, you know, being, I mean, clearly the oldest member of that cast 30 years on I mean, he had the white hair in 1955, Matt, in 2015, even though he got that aging work done, the plastic surgery in 2015. I mean, you know, the gentleman is on in his years, and they were able to interview him in a backyard in Santa Barbara, and it was a cute little anecdote. You know, they're asking him ahead of time, hey, you know, got to pick up some stuff at the store. What would you like? And the one producer, Lee Leshin, bought like, you know, $400 worth of food on the spread there. And
just to be prepared for Christopher Lloyd, whatever kind of chip, right, or pretzel or whatever.
That's the green room mentality, man. You gotta cater to people, and you know, this guy was in some major stuff in his day, and he had one pretzel chip and half of a bottle of water.
Hey, Hollywood, man, what do you want?
Yeah, but they showed us some clips, you know, really appetizing stuff as far as checking it out, the different trailers, and then they opened it up to questions, Matt.
Yes, and the first question was from somebody who, I'm going to assume this is the gentleman questioner is probably somebody who kind of doesn't fully understand that he's not completely meshed in everyday normal behavior. His question was, what if you had a time machine, what world event would you go back and stop? And the producers kind of paused, like, whoa, that's like a deep question. Then the gentleman went on to say it would be 9/11, and he talked about what a dark day that was, and then he went on to talk about Tom Cruise and Tom Cruise's discussions on prescription drugs and Scientology and bipolar. And it was like, we all love Back to the Future, and Back to the Future 1 and 2, and for the most part 3. Back to the Future as a trilogy, totally special, to a certain degree lightning in a bottle, also just, you know, wonderful and ageless and this and that the other. It also really isn't it's for fun, and it's to talk about nostalgia and how the world changes. It's not to sit and go, let's talk about the worst things there ever were. And it was a cringeworthy moment. And yeah, I don't know what else you say to a guy who, yeah, we'll just leave it at that, Pete.
Yeah, but I find that nothing takes a bitter taste out of an awkward question than perhaps some 26-year-old carbonated soda.
Yeah, they purported to have the soda left over from the last screen-used Pepsi Perfect bottle. They had shown a clip where a guy had the bottle and how there was about 2 inches left in the bottle.
It had evaporated through the years, which, you know, I guess nobody obviously accounts for. And, you know, produced before saying, oh, we wanted the guy to ship the bottle here so we could show you, produced the soda there, what was purported to be the soda. And before they could get out of their mouths, who wants to drink it? Somebody was on the stage.
So yeah, he drank it. We all groaned. They said, how was it? And he said the perfect answer, a little flat.
Right.
Then they revealed that actually was just Pepsi poured 45 minutes ago, but they do have three of these commemorative edition Pepsi Perfect reproductions. You know, I think there's been a pressing or a running of like 5,000 of them.
Which, and ironically, I had read to you as we were getting on the train that morning, oh, they're going to do this and they're going to charge $20.15 and they're going to make like 6,000 of them.
And it was like, oh, that's cool, but for $20, you know.
A thing of soda that I'm going to put next to my hoverboard, probably not so much. So people are freaking out over these three, and really, how do you judge what to give, you know, 300, 500 people in there? You know, how do you meet these out? And, you know, the begging went on for about 30 seconds before they revealed, you're all going home with one.
Yeah, the guy said, I'm going to pull an Oprah here. You get a bottle. Everybody gets a bottle. They're in the back. Thank you, everybody. Back in time, you know, check out the documentary, blah, blah, blah. And just, I mean, you know, backintimefilm.com. Yeah. Thunderous applause as we all start to walk out. And sure enough, Pete, for gratis, they handed out these bottles of Pepsi Perfect.
Yeah, in a little Lucite case, no less. And, you know, if you've not seen it in the movie, it's got an unusual shape. It's got a little goblet-esque flair to it. It looks futuristic. We're in 2015. We're still not drinking out of things like this. So it's a piece of future history nostalgia.
Indeed. And as you mentioned, Pete, because I mean, after the great presentation plus giving away the freebies, definitely want to stress, you can pre-order now on Amazon and iTunes for you know, the digital version or the Blu-ray or the DVD. And then it also hits Netflix on October 21st. So in addition to that, they're doing a Back in Time national tour. You can go to backintimefilm.com. It's going to be them premiering the film, talking about it. They're bringing an 80s-themed band called the Flux Capacitors, coming to a number of major American cities, as well as Baltimore. No, I'm just kidding. Baltimore, you're a major American city too. So, I mean, awesome presentation top to bottom.
Yeah, definitely the coolest freebie ever been thrown at one of these panels. And they have earned my attention with the documentary, so you should check it out. The next thing we checked out on Thursday, Matt, was The Comic Book Men.
Indeed, and it was kind of a situation of The Comic Book Men presentation was preceding the Star Wars Rebels panel, and we said let's go check out the room, because if it's like mostly filled, you know, before the Kevin Smith panel starts, then we'll just hang in there, because we kind of didn't have anything else on our radar. It was a little too early to eat. It was, you know, we hadn't walked around enough to work up an appetite, or to work up, oh, let's just go outside for some fresh air and some, you know, to see the New York. So we went in there even before it had started. And Kevin Smith comes out to thunderous applause. He introduces the Men from the Comic Book Men show, which I must confess I've never seen. And then, Pete, something unexpected happened at the Comic Book Men panel.
Yes, and that was that the four panelists barely spoke.
Now, longtime listeners will know that we, Kevin Smith, New Jersey guy, Central New Jersey guy.
Very close in the area to us at the Jersey Shore.
Absolutely. I mean, to the point that for his, I would argue, very unfairly attacked film, Dogma, he attended at the Monmouth Movie Theater, Pete, where you and I have been a number of times in
Eatontown, New Jersey.
Eatontown, New Jersey. You know, we both have been there a ton of times. He attended a protest against the film. Yes, against his own film. He went to a protest. Channel 2 News was there, and he told them, I've just heard that it's awful. I've heard that it's disrespectful to religion. I haven't seen it, but people have told me it's awful. So I know that means it must be awful. So certainly a guy who can, I don't know. I think that's a perfect response. But I personally found his kind of meandering, a conversation with Kevin Smith as it became to be engaging. I mean, there certainly were times where it was some slightly salty language. He talked about for example, when he gave up processed sugar, how he would have happily in those first 2 weeks have done a certain act to any gentleman who would have offered him a candy bar, and in rather graphic detail, wouldn't you agree, Pete?
In a panel before a cartoon that airs on Disney's, tween network, I will make no secret of my disdain for Kevin Smith for the Comic Book Men show, which is airing for its fifth season at midnight after the repeat of A New Walking Dead. But where he eventually meandered, and man, did he meander, I'll come to a grudging acceptance of his message.
Yeah, I mean, he concluded with a message of there has never been a time where it's easier to take what you personally think, your point of view on X, and to get it out there in a blog, in a podcast, in a YouTube channel, in your own self-funded series shot on your iPhone, blah, blah, blah. And you could tell it was off the cuff, because I think if it was rehearsed, it would have been a little, he would have maybe lopped off a couple minutes of the high passion. But he was really just saying to people, and rather poignantly so, I thought, he was saying, you are the person that you're supposed to be. You are the child that your parents wanted. You are the spouse that your spouse wanted. You are the parent that your children wanted, et cetera, et cetera. You are the worker that your coworkers want you to be. You've done all those things. Now spend a little time, said Kevin Smith, being just a little bit greedy, and the thing you want to do for yourself that you're passionate about, that you want to follow, that you want to create, go do that. And it was a lovely message. It really, really was.
It is, and it's inspiring, but it's hard to square that in what was really a message, a theme for the day, Matt, of doing these labors of love, and the third thing we'll talk about here in a moment in Star Wars Rebels, with a guy like Dave Filoni, who's executive producing those. But it was just hard to square, given, hey, these are my four friends who, one of which I had to essentially push into managing Jay and Silent Bob's Secret Stash, the comic book store in Red Bank, New Jersey, that the show is set. But you give us the touchy-feely, and the one guy barely spoke. The guy next to him, pardon me, I don't know their names, and I don't think we really need to say that they're household names, because they're not. It's just hard to square the incongruity of the message and what went on in the panel.
Well, Pete, certainly not incongruous was that for the following Star Wars Rebel panel, people from Star Wars Rebels were there.
They were.
That was a seamless transition on my part. That, see, I heard what Kevin Smith said. Now I'm creating. I wanted to create a transition. So I did, people. You can do it too.
Yes. So as mentioned before, we had executive producer Dave Filoni. We had the character, the voice, I should say, of the character Ezra, Taylor Gray. We had the big reveal. If you haven't seen the first season, at the end there, you get Ahsoka Tano back. So Ashley Eckstein, the her universe clothing maven. And then the big get there for the panel, and you know, the baddie for season two, playing the seventh sister, we had Sarah Michelle Gellar.
And I want to preface all of this by saying, back in the day, back in the 90s, I was a huge Howard Stern fan, and for whatever reason, Sarah Michelle Gellar had annoyed him, and he would pronounce her name Sarah Michelle Gellar, and that has now been burned into my brain as the way to pronounce her name. So apologies in advance if I refer to her as Sarah Michelle Gellar. It's just what my brain goes to first. I'm going to try and avoid it. But certainly wonderful to see her. And I'm sure we'll talk in a little bit about her interaction with some of the fans. But Pete, what were some of the highlights from this panel?
Well, the panel moderated by Lucasfilm Story Group member Pablo Hidalgo, longtime fan who's gotten involved here and really good with, you know, holding the torch of what stories count and what had been previously done, which doesn't. Talking about the upcoming season, it's an unusual broadcast schedule in that they gave us the first two episodes in June, kind of like an hour-long movie, Siege of Lothal, and now before they were giving us the next two, which will air the next 2 weeks, beginning October 14th, this Wednesday, talking a lot about it and, you know, where we're going to go, and having, of course, to be coy because we're dealing with another prequel type series.
It was the first of many things that we did at New York Comic Con where an actor would start to say something and then would look to their boss, the producer or the brass or whatever it might be, and go, I'm just going to let producer answer that. I don't want to get producer angry at me. And they would go, ha, 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 ha. And there'd just be this moment of, no, there will be consequences if I, you know, annoy the producer, director, executive producer, head of Lucasfilm Story Group, whoever it is that I might annoy, who might then be like, yeah, we're not going to need you anymore. So there was that. There was that starting at the Star Wars Rebels panel.
It's got to be unusual, and let's think about the real world impact. These voice actors and even the crew and the producers and everything like that, while they are well paid, they go from one project to essentially being unemployed before they find the next contract. And we have seen, and you can cite chapter and verse, examples where somebody says something and they spoke out of turn and something was spoiled, not by anybody we're going to talk about in one of these little discussions here today.
Pete, what were some of the takeaways from this Rebels panel?
Well, with Dave Filoni now full time taking over the executive producer chair in season two, he was brought in during season one. I think that Disney has really discovered how lucky they are to have somebody so knowledgeable, so passionate, and so talented with Star Wars, and you just let them go here. You let them talk about, well, here's some sketches and here's, you know, we'll talk a little bit in the press conference. And again, we're going to go into further detail later in the week with a lot of this. You let him talk about that. And then he hands it over to Ahsoka's voice to ask Ashley Eckstein to talk about, you know, reprising the character, and, you know, Taylor Gray, who didn't really know much about Star Wars, didn't even know that, you know, Luke is Darth Vader's son and stuff like that. And then
when he was hired, he didn't
when
know
he was
it.
Hired. Yes. Yes.
Which led to a moment of levity where Filoni mentioned that, but didn't mention when Taylor Gray was hired. and Sarah Michelle Gellar thought that she had just ruined it for him, and she was either acting embarrassed or was genuinely embarrassed for him. And then it was like, no. When he was hired 2 years ago, he didn't know. And she was like, you know, as a Star Wars fan and as a mom and a this and a that, she was relieved that she hadn't just ruined it for this, you know, for this this young guy in Taylor Gray.
Right. And, you know, we segued from there to the press conference at another point of the Javits, you know, having seen a couple clips. They showed a second trailer for season two of Star Wars Rebels. And, you know, we had podcast a watch along in the summer of the first season. Getting to see all of them, and Sarah Michelle Gellar had to leave a little earlier. So, and again, in deference, she is the biggest name on that panel. You know, they gave her 10 minutes of questions, and then we went through everybody else. Refreshing to see, Matt, and I've done far more of these than you have. You don't always get the same people in the room as you got on stage, and there you really did.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they were definitely embracing the fan community, whether it was at the panel or whether it was at this press conference of people who clearly were fans of the show. I'll give mild exception to the guy who said, "Do you think you'll ever have Tarkin in the show?" And you could just hear a groan in the room, and Filoni was like, "You know, we do have that computer model, so that's a direction we could go in the future." So he kind of bailed the guy out who didn't know that. Yeah, you've already had Tarkin in the show, so to bring him back, go get the voice actor and the stage, and then whatever you're going to pay to normally animate somebody, or you know, whatever you're going to pay for normal animation, you're going to do it because you're not making the model or whatever the proper term is from scratch. But they were just really, you know, they have a passion for this show. The notion, Pete, that Filoni full time and Eckstein, you know, with some time in between, you know, her character leaving Clone Wars and Clone Wars concluding, and then, you know, you don't need actors for a pre-production for Rebels until you do need them. That they have been involved with Star Wars animation for 10 years is just insane.
Yeah, and Clone Wars had to begin, obviously, because of the nature of that digital animation at that time in 2008, quite a bit off. And here is a voice actress who has aged with and into this role from somebody who was a fresh-faced newcomer to the franchise to somebody who is regarded, you know, little girls. It's Princess Leia and Padme, and then shortly behind it, it's Ahsoka Tano, you know, maybe the most kick-butt female character as a Jedi in all of that franchise.
Yeah, I mean, she probably, if you figure you're hiring people well in advance of, you know, to record stuff well in advance of when they actually reach, she's probably hired at 22 or 23 to play a character who's, you know, 14. And then here, now Ahsoka is early 30s, Ashley Eckstein is 34. The whole thing is stunning that you have this character that's been around for so long. You have an actress who has just taken it and gone with it. You know, not just kind of as, oh, I'm going to be the voice actor, but also to kind of take the Ahsoka aesthetic to the Her Universe clothing line and so on and so forth. It's really astonishing.
And then getting to see the work, so getting back into that Empire stage after, you know, a brief pause, worried that the Game of Thrones, which I would have loved to have seen that panel, you know, not completely spilling out of the room, but we were able to get back in for Rebels and to see those next two episodes. We're not going to go into them a ton. Let's just say if you liked Clone Wars and you watched Clone Wars, you're definitely going to want to watch those two episodes, the first of which airs Wednesday night, October 14th on Disney XD.
And I guess with that, Pete, that concludes the Thursday.
Yes. Yeah, so, you know, you get one in the last couple of years, we've gone for one day, and then we were turning right around on Friday. The first thing we did was make that beeline for the Q Hall. We, with not really a sweat, got the wristbands for the Marvel Agents of Prime Time panel later in the day. And then we had a scheduled appointment for the Lego Marvel's Avengers press conference right after that.
And that these Lego games and the Lego Marvel Avengers press conference was more on your radar than mine, but I found hearing the TT Games game director, director of this game, Arthur Parsons, hearing him speak for 40 minutes on the development of the game, the things they've put in, some of the internal structure of the company. You know, they kind of have teams that are friendly competing, but when the other team comes out with something I'll just make something up, for Lego Batman, they sit and go, oh, wow, we have to top that for, Marvel, right. Lego Marvel Avengers. And this is a guy who was passionate about his job, and I just felt completely excited about the product and felt excited about what he had to say.
I have played these Lego video games for a long time, dating back to, 10 years, 2005, the first one I ever played. Based on some footage I saw, was the Lego Star Wars, which was the first three prequels. And they are so faithful. They are so well done. And they bring in a lot of humor. And despite the violence, you're swinging a lightsaber and you're shooting little Lego bricks and you got to collect what are called the studs that are like coins and amass totals there to unlock things. They're really replayable. And they're really surprisingly nonviolent. They don't deal in lives. You get hit a couple times. Your character breaks into a bunch of bricks. He's reassembled and you go at it again. And if you've not played the Lego Marvel Superheroes one and you're into Marvel, consider yourself not getting the full experience because it's excellent. Clark Gregg, who plays Coulson in the live-action Marvel Cinematic Universe films and on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., was kind of the narrator, the guide in the first game, and just tremendous, tremendous stuff. And saw they were doing this follow-up, which they're going to deal heavily with the Avengers movies, and even bringing in the TV shows and Agent Carter, and a non-Netflix version of Jessica Jones. Because that just wouldn't work in a Lego world, as Parsons so plainly put it. Just wonderful, wonderful stuff. The game comes out January 26, 2016, and they made a number of reveals. I think it was unintentional in the room where we were, but just that Maximilio Hernandez is, nefarious now. Agent Sitwell character will not only be in the game voiced by him, but is a playable character, which, one of 200 some odd. He couldn't even give us an exact number. Clark Gregg is back on a voice. He said they have voice stems for all of the theatrical characters, and really, really some cool stuff. And ultimately, with the footage they showed in the trailer, just again, the attention to detail, the Agent Carter stuff, Matt, is done in black and white.
There clearly is just such a passion by TT Games to take the Lego aesthetic and then, in this case, the Marvel aesthetic. He also spoke about in the past having worked on Lego Harry Potter, and TT Games has also done some Lego Batman stuff. But just they seem, as a game company, really passionate about taking these other two worlds and the other two licensing partners that they're working with and really just making that sizzle as a game. And I can't wait to check out whether it's this game or some of the older ones or whatever, because it really, the passion of this guy just came across. Plus he had a British accent, so everything he said was just clearly refined and cultured. And he said British-y things, so it's win-win-win.
Also on hand were Marvel's Mike Jones and Bill Roseman. And, we kind of were in and out of the conversations with them, but it was Parsons, that really pulled this together as far. Not that those men aren't passionate, but they're not dealing as directly with the game. Parsons spoke to, and the thing I had asked him was, you know, all right, you mentioned Age of Ultron and what would be in from there. And that's obviously the driving force with the two Avengers movies now, given this is Lego Marvel Avengers. But I said, you know, was that where you cut off? Did you get Ant-Man in there? And he's like, you know, there is no cutoff. We will literally go up to when the game has to be locked that, yeah, let's put this in. And let's put this in, and let's put this in, and just so passionate and knowledgeable and interested in that world.
One more anecdote that I found interesting from the game production world is that, you know, he said there's never a ramping down. So as a company, they're always looking ahead to what's the next project, what's the next project. But, you know, as you're getting closer and closer to unmovable due dates, there's so much work going on, and, you know, you're focused on X, and then the guy next to you is focused on Y. Then you just come in one day and it's done. You know, you did your part and then somebody else did their part and now it's done. And it's just, now this game is, you know, is out of your hands, and, you know, whatever the next step is, so be it. But you don't work on this game anymore, which I wouldn't have imagined that's how it is for a game. I mean, certainly that's not the way TV and film stuff is. You know, the actors go home, but then there's effects, there's editing, there's da-da-da-da-da. With this, no, it's just, oh, we finally finished, the end.
And to the point where they will not tell Parsons his next project because he gets so passionate about that and starts building that world. And you can see where that would really kind of defray your focus.
Well, Pete, with that, we're definitely entering the portion of the podcast and the portion of the con where there was more Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Agent Carter, Daredevil, Jessica Jones stuff. We also have some Star Wars to talk about. Just a reminder, we're going to kind of hit full force, no pun intended, with the Marvel TV stuff in respective podcasts later in the week. But it is worth mentioning after the Marvel Avengers game thing. We actually heard from a fellow podcaster that Clark Gregg and Jeff Loeb and Chloe Bennett were going to be doing an interview at the Wikia booth. So we ran down there and got to see them answer some questions.
Yes, and it turned out to be fortuitous from the standpoint that only Clark Gregg and Marvel head of television Jeff Loeb were later at the panel. So this was one of few chances to catch Chloe Bennett, who plays Daisy Johnson, on the show, and to see her up close.
And I have to mention, because of Twitter and people tweeting back and forth and whatnot, after this, which the Wikia booth was, I mean, it wasn't on the convention floor, but if you think of kind of the large wide hallways outside the convention floor area, if you've ever been to a similar convention space, or perhaps to the Javits itself, dear listeners, that's kind of where the booth was. So big open area. We were able afterwards to meet up with Michelle from she writes for Hypeable. We got to see Paige from Level 7. We got to see the Clark Gregg reporter gal. So it was just, it was this neat moment where we kind of came together as fans and came together as people who are kind of creating content and commentary about the shows. We took some pictures, we handed out some buttons. Somebody else, came along, said, looked at the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. shirt, you know, the wonderful, logo designed by our pal in the UK, Ian, zort.co.uk. And you said, oh, you're a fantastic geek. You're fantastic and you're the geek, you know. So it was this wonderful moment of kind of people coming together over this show, which is kind of what we hope the podcast, all the different podcasts we do, we hope that's kind of how people feel, that you want to get together to talk about X.
And prior to that, pulled into a little bit of a conflict, Matt.
Indeed, Pete. Indeed. Clark Gregg recorded the latest update in the Dub Smash battle, and now
between Agent Carter and the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. cast, this had started at San Diego Comic-Con just as a back and forth to kind of tweak one another, using the Dub Smash app, where you can take a pre-recorded clip and it'll then, you know, like it sounds, dub that over whatever image you will put in front of your phone when you do that. And it escalated rather quickly to the point where it became a thing. Okay, we're going to do this and we're going to raise charity. You'll be able to donate and then vote. And they're reaching the final round here. They've already raised, you know, well into the $100,000 range. And we wound up in one.
Yeah, yeah, it's cool. I mean, the video is a little choppy and whatnot, but, you know, you can see a little of us in there, you know, so people can check it out on Clark Gregg's Instagram, among other places. New York Comic Con reposted it as well. Probably Clark Gregg's is a little bit easier because New York Comic Con Instagram is going to be posting a whole bunch of stuff. But, hey, Pete, I don't know about you. I didn't go to Comic Con thinking I was going to share the screen with Clark Gregg, and we ended up doing just that.
Well, I'm not as tall as you are. You share the screen with him. My Met hat, which you can very clearly see being, you know, bounced again and again and again, is visible. So when you watch it and see it, that's my arm.
With that, we kind of made our way to the signing that the three of them were doing. We were not able to secure a spot for that. That was kind of, they do a free raffle, but it's a raffle, or maybe raffle isn't the best word, but, you know, there's kind of, you know, there's 200 red cards and 500 black cards all in the bag. And if you pull a red, you come back and you get a thing signed. And if you don't, too bad, so sad. Because we were getting the bands for the Shield panel, you know, that kind of happened again. There's this increasing aesthetic at New York Comic Con. Got to make some of these decisions here. But what was nice is we knew going to the signing that we weren't going to get stuff signed. Like, you know, we knew ahead of time what the expectation was going to be for us. But they came out to thunderous applause and, lots of fan engagement as you would expect. And, certainly nice to see them, in the flesh again.
Yeah, and then there's the people that don't quite get it, who, while we're pretty much standing there and there is nowhere to go, somebody's got to swim upstream and be like, oh, what's this? You're standing here not moving. You're standing there not moving. Let me force myself between the two of you to go where there is no space to go.
Yeah, and there was one point where, like, I just, like, you know, say somebody starts to kind of, you know, want to get by, you shuffle a little bit, but I made the decision, I'm not going to move to my right anymore because the guy next to me does not need to be slammed into. I'm going to hold my ground. And I'm looking to my left and there's a guy next to me standing there who's up against a table, and the person trying to get past us, it's like, I don't know what you're trying to do, but we're not moving because we're jerks. I'm not moving because I'm not hitting the gentleman to my right, and the gentleman to my left isn't moving because there's a table up on a stage type thing. I don't know what to tell you. And the person shoved a little bit and turned around and went away.
Yeah, and maybe that's the best thing to do in that scenario. But we made our way then to the Agents of Primetime panel and screening there. They began with some Agent Carter details on the casting, who would be returning for season two. Little video there. Obviously, Haley Atwell and James Darcy, who plays Jarvis, could not be on hand as they're filming in Los Angeles. And they, in the little video, said they were sad that Dominic Cooper, who plays Howard Stark, wouldn't be in it. And then, of course, they blew that up in that the background that they had wasn't really the garden landscape that it looked to be. It was just a really well-lit and vibrant shade. And who came brooming his way past them then? Howard Stark himself, Dominic Cooper, joining the cast, making news here, Agent Carter season two.
At which point I turned to you and said, oh, she posted that on her Instagram, him sweeping. So that must have been when they shot that about a week ago for Comic-Con. But it's all good. I know not not everybody is, you know, concurrently aware of all the news for all this stuff. You know, a little bit later on, the filming of another series, which we'll mention in due course, where that was up to, I certainly wasn't aware of, and you know, that had been covered in the news and whatnot. So yeah, it's all good. It was a good. Jeff Loeb always likes to bring these little bits. You know, this is the third year that there's been an Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. panel, and the third year that it says on the New York Comic Con website and on Marvel.com that they're going to be screening an episode. So it's also the third year where Jeff goes, well, I don't know. Would you like to see a clip? Yeah. Well, I can't let you see a clip. Boo. Yeah. Because I have a whole episode. Yay. 40, let's roll it.
3-minute clip. Yeah. We should point out before they segue to the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. portion, with the casting, one character that there'd been a lot of speculation, she's not back. So we'll get into greater detail when we do that individual Agent Carter episode a little later this week. But some outlets,
Pete,
Matt, we're not going to name, some outlets got it wrong and said that the character of Angie will be back. Sadly, not confirmed, announced at New York Comic Con.
Indeed. Yeah, which I think everybody was like, oh, they're saving her to the end. They're saving her to the end.
Yeah.
And no, they simply didn't. So if they're not going to pull the trigger for the fan splash at that point, I dare say she's not returning for whatever reason. But I guess you could always still hold out hope. With that, also at that panel, as you mentioned before, Clark was there. No Chloe. And I had first wondered, like, oh, I hope she hasn't taken ill or whatever. But Pete, it was actually for a pretty good reason.
Yeah, the Walking Dead premiere was happening pretty much simultaneously, not terribly far away, about, you know, 8 blocks at Madison Square Garden. Her boyfriend is on the show now. So in solidarity, in support, she was there, not at the panel. Clark, though, you know, he's kind of the unofficial ambassador of New York Comic Con, particularly when it comes to Marvel. There was a piece that ran in the Daily News, which was talking about how he lobbies Marvel every year, and just the intensity of the fan. You know that he's been asked to sign Coulson Lives on an oversized breast or two. So, you know, he knows it. He loves it. He's a Northeasterner to begin with. And you wouldn't fault Chloe if it was maybe a little bit overwhelming, apart from the fact that, you know, she had somebody else's side to be by.
And I think, too, it was definitely, how should I put this? It's definitely for the benefit of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yes.
that at this high profile, you know, press line and then premiere, that the lovely Chloe Bennett wearing what she wore to that I'm sure that got a little extra sizzle for the show, well, for both shows rather, win-win-win for everybody.
Yes, and apparently there was some sizzle, Matt, not from the panel, which, you know, then pretty much ended when we were screened the third episode of the third season, which will air Tuesday. But apparently, like, two people overheard another person say something maybe about the Inhumans movie on Thursday night, which later became a story online. Marvel has canceled the Inhumans movie. And as the voice of reason here, we will tell you, no, they didn't.
We were at everything Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. that you could go to, aside from shaking hands with them and getting something signed. And we were on the train going back saying, multiple, you know, semi-reputable websites are saying that this was discussed and the Inhumans movie has been canceled. Then you get down in the article and it literally is, this was overheard in a bar by unnamed people. It in no way was said at all. And in fact, Inhumans came up and Chloe Bennett said, I don't make, you know, Chloe Bennett, would you be in the Inhumans movie? Somebody said at the Wikia panel. And she's, I don't know that stuff. You have to ask Jeff Loeb that. I read the lines. She clearly wants to stay out of that whether she knew or not, regardless, you know, it's probably a case of don't tell me, let me worry about what I have to worry about. But insane, right, that a rumor took on life like that.
And pretty irresponsible as far as the reporting. So I'll give him something equally irresponsible. Clark Gregg said he wanted to be Black Bolt. So now somebody can run with that they heard it on our podcast and that Coulson is Black Bolt.
With that, Pete, let's move on to Saturday. That's Saturday where we showed up, and yikes, the line is longer than last time, and Daredevil and Jessica Jones Q is on our radar. And as mentioned before, first it's closed down, and then why don't you tell us this tale of redemption?
So obviously on a weekend day where more people are able to go, there's going to be a crescendo in terms of content. These Marvel Netflix series, you know, Daredevil is the only one that's aired to this point, have gotten tremendous attention in the way that the broadcast stuff, you know, you can't binge it all at once. You can't become, you know, this really steeped fan in a day or two, and at least not initially. We were really kind of worried, especially when you podcast the stuff and you can't see the stuff. Our whole reason for being there that day was in jeopardy. And there was one gentleman there. We did ask him for his name. He, on several tries, he wasn't wearing visible ID and would not give us his name other than to tell us his name was Q.
And I assume that refers to, because we said, hey, we want to tell the show office that you helped not only us, but helped all these hundreds and hundreds, I would dare say close to 1,000 people.
He helped stop a riot, Matt, because it was quickly reaching a point. You know, I pointed out, look, you got a little bit more space in this line, and I hadn't seen anybody with a hand clicker counting people. So whether it's we know that this line can fill this many bodies, the number of times that they've done that, but there was clearly space for another 25 people, and people saw that it was capped. They were like, okay, I'm going to go in on the Firefly or the X-Files one or whatever. And we're there saying, along with a lot of other people, this is our reason for being here today. He said they're going to do an overflow line. So I go and ask one worker in the general direction where he pointed, doesn't know anything about it. I ask another employee. She doesn't know anything about it. Go back to him, and he's like, no, we got this. He's going over the radio. And finally, you know, maybe like 5-7 minutes later, they open up an outside lane, and there we were. Still a little apprehensive till you get that wristband on and you see what it says. All right, this doesn't say Robot Chicken, good. But, you know, he did a tremendous job. We took a picture with him. We're going to send this to the Reed Pop people and to the Javits people and let them know, not from a selfish standpoint, like, you got us in, here's a picture, you know, frame it. No, the guy did a really good job when people, as he mentioned, who are so passionate about this can get bent out of shape. Matt, we saw some of that stuff while we were in line in another line, and it doesn't always go well. And we saw some of that online as well. Why don't you speak to that?
Yeah, something I had said to you, Pete, while we were on this overflow line, which again, like, when officially the guy said, Mr. Q, as we're calling him, said, go over there to lane one, they're going to open up the overflow. We got there, and there were two more workers who said, hold on just 1 second, we're just getting organized. We see that you're going to be passing us. We're going to open the overflow line in a moment. And the two guys were just talking, okay, do you have the clicker? Is the clicker set properly? But yes. And fine. So in my mind, and in fact, I heard the one guy say, what is your clicker at? And he said a number, which I've since forgotten. So in my head, I was saying, like, at that particular moment, I was the front of the overflow line, and you were number, at least to get into the overflow line. And there already were some people there, I think, whoever, whatever. But this wave two of overflow, I was the first. So in my mind, when he mentioned whatever number, and I know the room seats 3,000, I was like, okay, we're several hundreds safe. While we were in that overflow line, I said, hey, maybe we'll be lucky, Pete. Maybe they'll look and go, well, most people are over here, but some people are over there. So if you have three boxes of bands, let's start two at the one line and one at the other just to move people through if you know that you have only enough, you know, if it's enough people in both lines. We saw later online, and indeed pretty quickly, we saw a worker starting to hand out bands. And on the overflow line, it was real smooth. People, she was kind of working down the line on the one side. People would come to her. There was that moment of panic. She's five away. She's four away. No, now she's moved on down. She says, no, there's a guy behind me. He's going to take care of you guys, blah, blah, blah. So we get them. That's all orderly. And we got out of there rather quickly. Saw online later that the main line, allegedly, according to this one guy who was tweeting, everyone, including Clark Gregg, who probably was on a plane back to Los Angeles at that point, but allegedly the main line ran out of bands at the price of those of us on the overflow. Don't know if that is indeed, you know, the whole story. If that's the case, you know, it's something to tweak for next year in terms of whatever the foul up was. I mean, I don't feel particularly bad, Pete. I don't feel that we took somebody's slot. They said there isn't. Are there more available? Yes, there is. We're going to do an overflow. Is Clicker Guy ready? Yes, Clicker Guy is ready. Unfortunate that possibly some people got frozen out who were quote unquote farther ahead in line than us. But I think the overall lesson I learned from this is they wanted to get the overflow people. They wanted to, if they had X number of bands, they wanted to have those fans ready for it. And if there was a slight foul up in the execution, fine. But better that than the number I heard at one point was there were 1,400 people on the line that was capped. That means that you have, you know, 1,600 to right. go that they were close to sending away. So, you know, thank you again, Mr. Q, whoever you are. I mean, I think I'm never going to forget the guy's face. Don't know if he'll remember us, but if we see him again in subsequent years, hey, sir, don't know if you remember us, but, you know, we'll retell the tale, shake his hand again, you know, just, and he said when we went up afterwards, we made a point to delay our leaving the Q Hall and delay our fun and all this and that, the other, to go see him again, to thank him personally, shake his hand. And that's when he said, we're all about the fans. We know how passionate you guys are. And if we can make, you know, if we can take care of you, we want to help the fans out. So thank you again, Mr. Q.
Wonderful job. And, you know, the composure that not really every employee there that day was showing in the face of that fervent passion. We've never seen more cosplay in that than we saw this year. And, you know, I think people myopically so get really, really revved up in light of missing out and things like that. You know, we've been clear, and this is not, you know, to tear down San Diego, but we don't want this to become like San Diego, that you fly there, you get the hotel room, and that's where you take a Polish shower, you know, the time before you get on the hotel or you get on the airplane to go back, because you've been camped out in front of the Civic Center there for 3.5 days to see these two panels. We don't want that to become that way. I'm really fearful it could, but, you know, examples and, you know, employees like this really help to make a difference.
Absolutely. So that then, you know, we're walking out of there at 10 o'clock with the bands for 5 o'clock. So with that, we had some time ahead of us. And where did we head next, Pete? Where did our journey take us?
Well, on my radar, as all things Star Wars are, I had checked out the Disney Lucasfilm publishing Star Wars Journey to the Force Awakens, which is about all the various books. A plan was pretty expertly broken once they knew where the new movie would go. Okay, we're 30 years past Return of the Jedi. We've thrown out the expanded universe, so now we've got to retell the tale of Han and Luke and Leia. You know, what have they been up to, and even other characters. So Pablo Hidalgo again was on hand, and there he was as one of the writers as well. But, you know, we had Michael Siglin from Lucasfilm Publishing moderating, and the rest of the guests here were Jason Fry, who is the author of Weapon of a Jedi. We had Greg Rucka, who does who did Smuggler's Run, the Han Chewie adventure there. Claudia Gray, who noted young adult writer there. She's done the Firebird trilogy. She wrote Lost Stars, which is really kind of a Romeo and Juliet-esque tale set in the Star Wars universe. Chuck Wendig, who wrote the novel Star Wars Aftermath, and Adam Bray, who wrote the nonfiction about the fiction, Absolutely Everything You Need to Know About Star Wars.
As somebody like myself, who certainly, you know, is into Star Wars a great deal, but it's not kind of that, you know, it's not that picture of my childhood for me. That's
you're not
more
Pete.
Star Trek.
Just say as Matt, not Pete.
Indeed. It was still fascinating just to hear about how these different writing assignments get handed out, you know, how Lucas Publishing will say, well, we want something right after Return of the Jedi. We want this, we want that. Some of the writing process, not that they got deeply into, you know, oh, that's the secret. Now I can become a professional writer too, but it was just, you know, sitting down and being really excited about the characters. And it's like, I got a Han and Chewie adventure, and I got, it's right after the Death Star, and they got to get into all sorts of trouble and get out of it. You know, that guy was so passionate, and even down to the one book, I think it's titled something along the lines of like, you know, Everything You Need to Know About Star Wars. The one guy is saying, you know, that he has a travel writing background. So his portion of that book, which had four writers, his portion, you know, he's doing travel writing about Joe's Bar in Lothal and menu items at the Mos Eisley Cantina and just treating it as a travel book. Absolutely fascinating to see how they're, you know, how they're bringing publishing to Star Wars and all of that.
Yeah, and again, no secrets given away, but talking about how they have seeded details, and Hidalgo in particular, you know, made the suggestion, go back and read these a year from now, because you will see the resonance in the details they've scattered amongst these many works. They never wanted to put spoilers, and they're not spoilers in there, but they're references and subtleties that, having seen the upcoming work, will make a lot more sense.
Yeah, it really was a fantastic panel just to hear their passion. And you know, I certainly have read in what now is the legacy books. I mean, I've read a decent amount of them. Certainly the Zahn trilogy, Tales from Mos Eisley Cantina, Tales from Jabba's Palace. Those five books come to mind. But this panel got me excited about some of these Star Wars books. You know, not all of them are necessarily, you know, for the adult level, you know, whether you're talking young adult, which, you know, there's a lot of fun young adult books that adults can read. I know there's some that are even a notch beneath that. That were discussed, but it sounds exciting. You know, it's kind of Star Wars is alive again in publishing.
And it was one of the rare panels done down one of the other halls. These rooms aren't as big, that was capped, that and pretty far ahead of its you know, time.
But
to,
wait,
to,
I mean,
to go on there.
Let's put that in context, though. Capped. The Star Wars book panel in a room that seated maybe 300, was the line was capped maybe a half hour before. To me, that's not unreasonable.
But also illustrates the interest and the demand in anything Star Wars.
Totally agree. Totally agree. I mean, if you show up 25 minutes before and you're just agog that the line is full, okay, shame on you. But I could see, too, how you might say, it's a Star Wars book thing. I can show up 25 minutes before. The people were showing up at the start and being like, what? You can't just let me go in there? No, there's 300 people online. Also, Pete, a lesson I took, just like a convention lesson, I guess, that I took from this, people always will make a – when they're led into the room, I guess people – logically make a beeline for the center, or they might make a beeline for the first seats that they see. You and I kind of, it was like, oh, yikes, this is like we're halfway on the line here, and it looks like the seats are 80% full. So we kind of just walked around the perimeter of the seating area, ended up front row all the way to one side, granted, and the podium did block one guy's face. But A, they had a, you know, had the screen so you could see what was going on, and B, we were front row for this thing. That was awesome.
It was. And from that excitement to you know, get a little time to go to the floor and walk around, really the day we had the most open time, and then really crescendoing, Matt, with the Marvel Netflix panels, an hour and 45 minutes scheduled there. And what did we see?
Well, what we knew was we weren't going to get too much footage. You know, the fact that S.H.I.E.L.D. will show an episode 3 days before it airs or whatever, okay, fine. Last year at the Daredevil, last year this was just an hour long, and it was just Daredevil, and they spent that whole hour with cast introductions, applause, applause. Everybody talks about their time on the whatever or their anticipation or, you know, whoever, whatever. You show three clips, good night, everybody. You take some questions, good night, everybody. So we were like, okay, they're doing Daredevil and Jessica Jones. It'll probably be a similar thing, two chunks of 45 minutes. And, you know, we'll get into greater detail on the Daredevil and Jessica Jones podcast later in the week. But Jeff Loeb comes out, applause, applause. He says his initial stuff. He's always quick to thank the various suits, some of which are in the room. So he's savvy in that regard. You know, the head of ABC TV and that kind of stuff. But then he goes, hold on a second, I have an idea. And he comes back, he goes like this, hold on, I have an idea. Wait, you know, this is totally unscripted. Hang on, I'll be right back. He runs away, and we're saying, okay, what's he doing? Then from the waiting area, and again, we knew both casts were there, but he takes, well, Pete, you explain it. Who does he take up on stage for the briefest of moments?
Yes, we suddenly got Charlie Cox, who plays Matt Murdock, Daredevil. The Mike Coulter, Luke Cage actor, and of course the luminous Kristen Ritter, who plays Jessica Jones. Three quarters of the Defenders right there on stage before Iron Fist has been cast, or at least they're saying he's been cast, and the Defenders team up coming eventually, all four of them in a miniseries on Netflix.
And it took him to kind of say, this is three quarters of the Defenders, for it to sink into a lot of people. We have not seen these three people together. Oh, and P.S. I mean, not that we had a schedule ahead of time, but, you know, it was pretty quickly, it was clear it was going to be Daredevil, then Jessica Jones. So to get them together was just absolutely fantastic for that briefest of moments.
Yes. And, you know, I'd asked you on the line, okay, what are we going to see? What do you think? An hour and 45 minutes. We had never been in one that was scheduled for this much time. You're going to have two guests. And for those of you who have never attended a panel like casts of guests, I should say. And there's a pretty regular situation with the way that Marvel runs it. They're going to make a bunch of thanks. They're going to make the introductions. They're going to show you a clip. They'll get you excited. Then they'll bring the cast out. Loeb will ask a question or two of each cast member. They'll take a couple questions and then move on. And, you know, how you segue from one to another, there can be a little bit of latitude. And Matt, I asked you a particular question.
You said, do you think they screen an episode of either? Do you think they screen the Jessica Jones pilot? And I dare say we were both in agreement. They're going to send some clips our way, but it's going to be what it was last year for Daredevil. It's just going to be times two in everything that you've described and then the transition. And if they don't use every last minute of the hour 45, you know, maybe it runs an hour 30 if they're ahead or whatever, whatever. And We have everything as expected for Daredevil. Saw the season two preview for the first time worldwide anywhere. Saw that twice. Then the Jessica Jones cast comes out. We hear some questions. And then, Pete, having seen Jeff Loeb as many times as we have before, what about a clip? And he says, no, 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 we're not showing a clip. And then Melissa Rosenberg, the showrunner, starts to stand up and she's starting to wave her fist at him and this and that, the other. And then, Pete, the reveal of the evening.
We got the pilot. We have seen, we were the first ones in the world outside of anybody at Marvel and those people that deal with it at Netflix to screen the initial episode of Jessica Jones, which we weren't even given with a name. Those names that have surfaced online still not confirmed. So we don't even know the episode title. So I can't even tell you what episode I've seen other than episode 101. It was great. We're going to go into very sparing detail. We're not going to give you a lot. They obviously sweep the room here for people taking video. We didn't take notes. But we took mental notes that we're not going to give you other than to say it was great. It was the word I use, mesmerizing. Matt, I know you had some particular praise for it, but we can't tell you much. It's one thing to get Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. episode 303, 4 days ahead of time. It's another thing to get the first in, a highly anticipated Netflix Marvel exclusive 45 days before it airs.
I'll tell you this, dear listeners. I'll tell you this today about the Jessica Jones pilot. I'll tell you three things. First, TVMA. We spent a lot of time talking about how Daredevil was TV, was PG-17 or PG-15 or whatever the phrase was that some of the producers used, where, a little bit more than PG-13, but not R-rated. This is TVMA because of huggy kissy time. And equal language to Daredevil is, I would almost argue, a little bit more violence too from what we saw. So that's number one. This is TVMA. So bear that in mind that if you're like, I'm not easily offended with violence to watch Daredevil with my, my 10-year-old. Okay, just so you know, it's a different ball game here for Jessica Jones. That's number one. Number two, this is a show that's going to be profoundly about gender. The fact that you have, a super powered person as your lead character, a script written by the female showrunner and a pilot, and I believe the second episode also directed by a woman as well. This is not lip service to, look, we are doing diversity. Diverse people made this, people who are different kinds of people than have did Daredevil, for example. And it shows top to bottom, big characters to small characters, that this is a show that's looking at gender in a different way. And third, here's what I will say, Pete, possibly the best hour of Marvel television to my memory.
That's pretty high praise right there, given what you saw in season one of Daredevil and what they've done on the broadcast side with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Agent Carter. But, we will, as we've said several times, we're going to record a New York Comic Con episode for each of these properties, save Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. We're going to do our regular Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. episode on Tuesday night, having seen that episode and breaking it down. Fantastic Geek style for you, as we always do. But you're going to want to check out Jessica Jones. Just remember that TVMA. Think Ma. You don't want to be watching this with Ma in the room.
And I think it bears repeating a third time. Seriously. Not just for what you see, for just, yeah. With that, Pete, I mean, we walked out of the Javits Center just absolutely flying high. It was great meeting listeners, running into people. There was one point on the S.H.I.E.L.D. line where three different sets of listeners, a two and a one and a one, we were all within 10, 15 feet of each other, some of which, NJ Sci-Fi Geek, I believe is her name on Twitter. But I mean, we've been at like the same Star Trek convention before and just haven't met up or whatever. So just magical experience running into listeners, seeing them, shaking hands, people recognizing the logo, talking to people, whether even if they're not listeners or followers, just talking to people in line, their passion for these properties, and just an amazing, amazing time at New York Comic Con.
It was great to run into so many of you. We say it all the time. We have the best listeners, the best fans, the best followers. We can't do this without you. And you know, we've run into some of you before. We ran into more of you than ever at New York Comic Con 2015. So this one will always be special for us in that regard.
Yeah, it's a humbling experience because, you know, we do what we do and people out there dig it. And it's, you know, to have a forum where we get to run into some of you was just incredibly special, incredibly humbling. And it inspires us to keep on going, Pete. I know you had discussed possibly revising what we were going to do this week in addition to Shield on Tuesday. So why don't you take us through the schedule for the rest of the week?
Yes, we will be doing our Agent Carter thoughts. That will be available for you Monday, tomorrow night. We will
brief. They didn't show us much, so don't expect much.
You know, but we'll talk casting and the character reveals there, again, with far more specificity. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., our podcast will be released, as is normal, on a Tuesday night. You might want to check your feed a little earlier, though. You never know. Certainly not before the episode, however, has aired on the East Coast, as per normal. Wednesday is the body of season 2 premiere of Star Wars Rebels, and we took quite a bit of audio from the press conference in particular. So we're going to be putting together a little something special for that, for the people that are excited about that heading into the rest of season 2, and you Buffy fans out there. On Thursday, we will be taking on The Man with No Fear in the Daredevil panel wrap up there on our Daredevil podcast. And then on Friday, our second full episode of the Jessica Jones podcast. We will not be discussing the first episode, so please understand that. There's one detail that I am only going to share about the first episode, and it is a non-spoiler, so you'll have nothing ruined by Spoiler Pete. That'll air on Friday.
My instinct will, I mean, I agree with you, Pete, just A, the spirit of when Jeff Loeb looks the room in the eye, not that it was us in particular, but and says, don't share the details. I feel like you kind of, you have to honor the karma gods. Otherwise, you know, something happens, but
you have to oblige. And I've seen some details already shared and whatever, but two things. One, let's judge this on its own merits. So many of the people who were reacting early on were, you know, Daredevil this. No, they're under the same umbrella. They're wildly different, even though they're in the same neighborhood, in the same universe, in Hell's Kitchen, in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. But judge them on their own merit. And two, don't put out these details so soon.
Indeed. I'm sure I will be profuse, though, with my non-specific praise of it, because this is a fantastic pilot, but
they accomplished the mission of getting people hyped about this show with the 3,000 that were treated to the pilot last night.
Indeed, Pete. And you know what else is a treat? Is talking to you on Twitter. How can people do so?
You can find me on Twitter at Peter, P-I-E T-E-R-J Ketelaar, K-E-T-E-L-A-A-R, 6,464. That's right, 6,464 followers. Can't be wrong.
While I am personally on Twitter as Looking Back Lost, you can find the podcast in a variety of spots online. We are a Fantastic Geek. That's fantastic with the P-H. And you can find us under that name on the .com, the Gmail, and the Twitter. And Pete,
Facebook.com/Fantastic Geek, all one word, again with the PH. Get on there, like us today, and you won't regret it.
Well, that, Pete, looking forward to touching every single podcast feed that we do. If you're listening to this, obviously it's pop culture. This will, you know, pop culture will get updated with everything, but everything gets a little refresh this week. Fittingly after the epic ride at New York Comic Con. So with that, it's time to go to bed, so I'm going to leave you to the final word.
Hey, look, a line.